the EMWD Water District Board of Directors to order this morning. For this afternoon being for the special meeting of February 19, 2020. Director Slauson, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
Sir, everyone please stand and face the flag and repeat after me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
With that, we'll go to agenda item one, which is for public comments, and it's a subject within the jurisdiction of EMWD. And seeing no cards, no one raising their hand. Okay, and we'll go back to the introduction of guests.
Thank you. In addition to Malachi Ramos from the Lake Tennant West and our web team, I'd like to introduce Ms. Doyle Arias. She is our new bilingual public affairs specialist. Started a few weeks ago, most recently came to us from Jeff Stone's office. She has a lot of experience doing community outreach with our Latino community, and we are very excited to have her showing up our Latino outreach program, and she's also assisted in our education program.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you. Welcome. Okay. Seeing no one here for public comment, we'll go to the executive reports, Paul.
Good afternoon, President Sullivan, members of the board. Included in your board package is a written report. I'd like to update you on several items. One, we just pulled off the latest data on the imported water supply conditions provided by Metropolitan. Right now, it's interesting, it's kind of a mixed water supply forecast on the imported water, with the Colorado River Basin experiencing snowpack that's about at 117% of normal, so I think that's very positive. But the Sierra snowpack is only 64% of normal in the northern Sierra and about 56% of normal in the southern Sierra. It's a little bit more concerning on the State Water Project. The current State Water Project allocation is 15%. Met's estimating if the trend continues that it could be in the 50 to 60% range ultimately by the end of the year if conditions persist. But I think the good news is Met has a tremendous amount of water in storage. In fact, it has the highest storage levels in its history with 3.1 million acre feet of drier storage available for the region, as well as over 600,000 acre feet of emergency storage. Diamond Valley Lake, for example, is 98% full, right at 800,000 acre feet. Locally, our rainfall is tracking kind of average, depending on where you are in Southern California. In the L.A. Basin area, it's about 94% of normal, and in the San Diego region, about 127%, although, as we all know, we've had a pretty dry month and a half. So, all in all, it's looking like a fairly mixed rain and snow year, but I think certainly would not anticipate that we would have an imported water shortage of any kind this year because of the tremendous amount of water that has in storage. Under more past ongoing activities locally, looking at our groundwater recharge and our conservation, our groundwater recharge is, you know, we've been putting additional water under the Saboba settlement into the groundwater basin. We are well into the 2022 deliveries. We've had 4,879 acre feet for 2022 pre-delivered of the 7,500 acre feet. Water is continuing to be delivered by Metropolitan. And also for the, we're seeing good storage in the basin as well as good conservation levels. So one of the things we've been tracking, particularly in looking at the drier weather in January, is how is our water conservation on part of our customers. For January 2020, there was where our demands were running about 15% lower than in January of 2013. So you can imagine we're about 15% lower in demands. We've had a lot of intervening growth. And the one way to look at that is per capita demands. Our per capita demands are about 26% percent lower in January than they were in January 2013. So I think we're really seeing a lot of embedded water use efficiency. Our customers continue to do things like convert their landscaping, convert over to recycled water. We have an item on the board today. And so we're really seeing good water use efficiency even in these warmer winter months. A couple of big things happening at Metropolitan I want to report on. First, we're going to be coordinating closely with Director Record, and staff's going to be fully engaged on both these activities. One is MET's proposed biannual budget and rates for fiscal years 2020-2021 and 2021-2022. MET's budget for those 2 years is proposed at $1.8 and $1.85 billion respectively. They're assuming about 1.6 million acre feet of sales. Last year, MET ended up at about 1.42 million acre feet of sales, so a fairly conservative assumption on sales. And they're running at about a $250 million capital improvement program. The staff is describing it as a maintenance budget, so they're not increasing staffing, and they're proposing a full service rate increase at about 5% for the next couple of years. So we're working with staff and analyzing the budget. We're looking at some of the rate drivers. There was a very good board workshop recently at MET, and also a workshop last Friday at the MET member agency general managers meeting. So they're looking at pay-go amounts, reserve levels, debt service coverage, some other factors that are really rate drivers. The next step in the process will be to have some additional budget workshops. Up to five total budget workshops are scheduled, and the proposed approval of the budget is scheduled for April 14, 2020. The second effort, which is more long-term, but I think ultimately related to future rates and charges, is the update of MET's Integrated Resources Plan, or their IRP. They update that every 5 years, so they last updated that in 2015. I think 2020 IRP is going to be particularly critical. We're seeing significant changes in demands for MET's water, significant emphasis by the member agency and investment in large local resource projects, including potable reuse and other projects. MET has substantial storage that benefits those agencies, and several other factors that I think are really going to drive this IRP. So the process is going to look at this. It's also going to reestablish some reliability goals for MET. What level of reliability should MET have relative to the member agencies and providing to those member agencies? And I think it's more importantly really going to raise some critical policy issues, such as, should MET, and to what extent should MET still provide incentives for local resource project development and conservation when their member agencies are trending towards rolling off of their demands. In other words, paying people to roll off of Metropolitan when a lot of that's happening already. So I think it's really going to be an opportunity to raise some of these important questions, and then I believe this will substantially shape kind of MET's approach to its budget rates and charges in subsequent years. So I think it's really going to be an interesting process. That IRP report, there's going to be a process that goes over the next 6 months, and they're looking at late summer of this year to have a draft IRP report ready for the board to consider.
Paul, while you're on the subject of rates, I think it's worth noting that this budget does not include a demand management charge.
Correct.
And still a 5% proposed increase, so that's pretty significant, and I really think it points to the idea that we've been so good at conservation and storage that now we're paying the price for that, and there's going to have to be some really hard decisions made going forward. The IRP is going to be a really good place to do that, but also finance for this budget, so certainly be looking for Eastern's perspective as we go through that.
Sure, thank you. Last, I wanted to report on our local storage. We talk about Metropolitan storage. One of the places we do store water is in the Hemet-San Jacinto Basin. The Water Master recently reported to the Technical Advisory Committee, the Water Master Advisor, data regarding groundwater storage levels in the basin. And for Eastern, the advisor reported that at the end of calendar year 2019, the district's accumulated about 23,500 acre feet of unused adjusted base production that's been carried over in the basin, and about 3,780 acre-feet of unused Saboba settlement water. So we have about 27,355 acre-feet of storage that's available to us in the basin. If you think about that, that's about 32% of our potable demands in 1 year. So we have a really nice supply buffer that we're building up in that basin that we can use at any time. So I think that's very good news. Overall, I think the report was good on the general health of the basin. You know, with the implementation of the management plan after the adjudication, the basin was still trending down and is now really going in a more positive trend. And in the management area, the Water Master Advisor reported that the groundwater change in storage year over year was positive 18,500 acre feet. So we're seeing basin conditions rise as well. So I think that's all good news for the Hemet San Jacinto Basin. And that completes my report. Unless there are any questions? Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. Laura?
I got
Nick. Really? Joe?
Good afternoon, President Sullivan and the board. Just a couple items of interest. We have been coordinating with the Baltimore Water District, and they have scheduled their next member agency engineering management meeting here at the working closely with PTA. We're going to make our board available. We have been having scheduled for April 16th. It will be an opportunity for us to highlight many of our initiatives. We're also planning to provide a tour of our Mesa Foundation complex, including the ongoing construction. On a separate matter, we have been working with several developers in the city of Menifee on Highway 74, immediately east of where we are, essentially the area around Heritage High School. They have called for a meeting from various agencies to discuss the infrastructure that is needed to promote growth along Highway 74. That meeting has been scheduled for May, specifically on May 15th, again here at EMWD in our boardroom. We are working very closely with the various developers to make sure the timing of our regional infrastructure is such that we will be able to accommodate growth happening there. So a number of agencies have been invited, including the city, the Menifee, Flood Control, Caltrans, and other agencies. So we will be participating in that meeting.
And as Joe mentioned, one of the things we've been doing in preparation of that meeting is meeting individually in a group with the landowners who are interested in this, primarily Brookfield Homes for their project. There's another group for the parcels that are immediately north and adjacent to Highway 74. We've been meeting with those landowners and their representatives, so we'll be well prepared for the meeting.
Yeah. Actually, we got good feedback from the earlier meeting, and they're grateful that we're moving forward. Okay. Jeff?
Nothing to me.
Okay, with that, we will go to the consent calendar. I will accept a motion and a second for items A through E, G and E, and J through P.
So, second.
Mr. President,
yes.
Could you show me as abstaining on the minutes?
Oh, sure.
Did I miss that meeting?
Sure. We'll let the record reflect that one for director record. All right. I'll accept a motion and a second.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. We have a request to pull number I for a clarification or questions.
F.
Oh, F. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, F.
Yeah. I just had a quick question, and I think you answered it at the planning meeting. The money, where was the money coming from? Was it coming from rates, or was it coming from sewer charges, or
no? That would be the recycled rates. Not on that one. The other one for the orange was actually standby fees.
Right.
For that.
So for those, you know, the majority of the participants, vast majority, are recycled water customers. So the funds that are funding the program are embedded in the recycled water rates. We also have
customers who are participant who are citrus growers who are in the district service area don't receive direct recycled water service but are paying standby fees. And so the standby fees that have been collected from those have been used for this purpose.
Okay, so the citrus guys are paying through standby.
Correct.
And the others are coming directly through rates. Are they coming from rates?
There's no rate surcharge, but it's embedded in all the rates.
All rates.
Right.
So if you're selling water in to Rancho, Rancho is paying the fee for the part of the fee?
No, because they have a wholesale rate.
That's wholesale rate.
The retail
okay.
rate.
With that, I'll move the motion.
Okay.
It's been moved and seconded. On F, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. On agenda item I, Director Corona has.
Yes, I need to recuse myself because Woodside Homes and potential litigation.
Okay. And since we have a quorum, I need to recuse myself on
item Q. You want to do it both at
yeah,
once?
Yeah,
sure.
You could do the other.
That's fine.
Because of a possible conflict of
as long as we're
so do you want to do items I and Q now?
Yeah, we'll do items I and Q. And let the record reflect that Director Corona and Director Slauson have left the dais.
I'll make a motion to approve items I and Q on the consent calendar.
And I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Corona and Slauson abstaining.
Okay.
The records show that the two directors have returned. We'll go to agenda item 4, which is the action calendar. 4A is approve and authorize the Fourth Amendment to the General Manager's Employment Contract.
Thank you, President Sullivan, board members. As you know, on February 10th, I announced my intention to retire from service with Eastern Municipal Water District. We had worked in consultation with the board to develop some objectives for a smooth retirement process and transition. Those included a seamless handoff between my last day in service and the newly selected general manager, and then also some overlap period to provide training and support for the general manager and to assist the board. In that regard, we thought it was prudent in consultation with legal counsel to amend my agreement to reflect both my duties before and after the transition and the handover to the new general manager. So there's several items that are addressed in this amendment. One is the term of the agreement is adjusted for the recruitment and then the overlap. The current term is proposed is through March 15th of 2021, and that would include that overlap period. It also has an option in there, which was expressed by the executive committee, if the board has not selected a general manager or that's delayed and they need to go out for a re-recruitment process, if it could be extended beyond that March 15th date. So there is a provision for an automatic six-month extension or up to six-month extension if requested by the board. And I would certainly honor that and be happy to do that. But again, the board can trigger that if it so wishes. The other item on there is previously in my contract, it had limitations on the amount of paid leave I could use during the time between now and my last day in office. Those are carried over and included in this amendment. So it's 9 days and 71 hours. And it also describes, the third item is it describes my duties and availability during the overlap period. So with that, this was drafted and reviewed with legal counsel. And so I just put it on the agenda for the board's consideration.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Paul. Agenda item B, which is approve and authorize the acquisition of a portion of assessor's parcel number 432-260-023 in the city of San Jacinto, an appropriation in the amount of $640,000. John.
Members of the board, I'm going to refer to our little property manager, Cheryl. She does such a good job of explaining to you the chance to present the board.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon, President Sullivan, Board
Members. Good afternoon.
Today's acquisition of a portion of a parcel located in the city of San Jacinto. A little bit of background. This San Jacinto Valley Raw Water Conveyance Facility Project Phase 1 is an element of the SJV Water Banking Program. Phase 1 consists of the EM25 service connection, flow control facility, chlorination facility, and approximately 2.25 miles of a 60-inch diameter raw water transmission pipeline. The proposed property acquisition, staff identified a portion of the larger parcel for a future flow control and chlorination facility. The reason why this specific site was picked was because we can connect directly to Met's pipeline, which is buried underground, and it helps defer the capital costs for our facilities going to the east. The property is approximately a little over 2 acres, and the guiding zone is part of the Esplanade specific zone is commercial general. Market data, the five comparable sales indicated an average price of $546 per square foot, and with that, the fair market value was determined to be $517,000. An offer was made, and after negotiations with the property owner, he agreed to sell the property for $500,000, which came out to approximately $532 per square foot. The closing of escrow will not be completed until all due diligence is performed. So our recommendation to the board is to authorize the general manager or his designee to execute the purchase and sale agreement, to authorize the Director of Engineering Services or his designee to take such actions as necessary to administer the purchase and sale agreement, and approve an appropriation of $640,000 to fund the cost associated with the acquisition, which would be surveying the site, fencing the site, securing it. So with that, are there any questions?
Do you have any questions to share?
Well, as we had this presentation in planning committee, and I expressed then that I'm surprised that properties are going for that kind of money in San Jacinto, even though it's zoned commercial, it's really remote, and I don't know when that commercial use will come into play. Having said all of that, I've been through these issues before. I know it's an important piece of property, and I know that you can spend a lot of money going back and forth and maybe ending up in eminent domain. I don't want to see that happen. So while I do think it's a high price, I'll move the item.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. We go to agenda item. Thank you,
Mr.
Cheryl.
President, I'm going to excuse myself on this item. My wife has potential financial dealings with this individual or LLC.
Okay. Okay, this is to approve and authorize an accelerated retrofit program funding agreement with Western States Mobile Home Parks LLC for an amount of $1,468,311 for the lakes at Hemet West and appropriation in the amount of $1,500,000. John.
Thank you, President Sullivan, members of the board. Let me give an update on the Recycled Water Accelerated Retrofit Program. They're showing out ARP. To recap, the ARP was put together in 2015 in response to the state's requirement for mandatory conservation. The goal is to help our customers advance recycled water retrofits. It consists of three key elements. First, we provide technical and permitting design support up to and including the final actual retrofit drawings, construction drawings. We also do all of the service connections within the right-of-way, the new recycled water services and the abandonment of the potable services. But most significantly is the financing element. The program was set up to provide up to $5,000 per acre-foot of annual usage to pay for the on-site retrofit construction costs. The customer would then pay a special ARP rate, which is set at 75% at potable. The delta between the ARP rate and the recycled water rate then makes the district whole after a period of 8 years, and the customer that would then refer to that then in effect recycled water rate. Phase one kicked off in August of 2015 with an objective of retrofitting 400 acre feet. We completed 24 sites. This was really the low-hanging fruit. Parks and schools were the focus. The total phase one cost was $1.9 million over a 10-year period. The water conservation value was $405 per acre foot. So far, we've recovered about $870,000, both through the MWD on-site retrofit rebate program as well as that rate differential. In September 2017, we kicked off phase two. One of the unique things about phase two is we wanted to target non-functional turf as part of the retrofit projects. In September, Ford approved and authorized $2.5 million to move forward with phase two. So we've completed, out of the 21 sites, we've completed 16 of them. We have three that are in construction. We're finalizing the funding agreement for a small project valley-wide right now. And the most, the largest project for both phase and phase one and phase two is what I'm going to present to you today, and it's pending your approval. Before I get into that, though, I wanted to highlight a project that we're really excited about, the Lowe's Paris Regional Distribution Center. If anyone has driven down Ramona Expressway in Indian, it's surely seen the amount of non-functional turf that's along the streetscape on the south side of the road there. This project uses 49 acre feet for streetscape irrigation. And the retrofit design included over 220,000 square feet of turf transformation along the water expressway and Indian. So that's converting it from non-functional turf to drip irrigation, shrubs, and a mulch base. So when the project is completed, actual ongoing recycled water demand is going to be decreased by 40% of what the current demand is. So we have executed the funding agreement with Lowe's, and we're starting construction this month. The ARP financing is maxed out at $5,000 per acre foot for about $245,000. That was included in the original appropriation for phase two. Through Metropolitan, we're expecting $175,000 in rebates for the turf conversion. And then the customer is paying $65,000. The total project cost is $485,000. One of the things that I learned about this is the management for Lowe's is in North Carolina, and water issues in North Carolina is different than in Southern California.
Right. It's considered a nuisance back there.
So we're very excited that that project is moving forward. So the project that I want to focus in on is the lakes at Emmett West. This is a 55-plus community located in the city of Emmett, in the west end of town on Highway 74, just across from the Florida Promenade, the Linco Center there on Myers. It is currently on the Fruit Belt rate zone. There's about 700 resident sites, about 640 of those are currently occupied. The site includes a very nice clubhouse, a pool, a 9-hole executive golf course. And in total, they have over 21 acres of irrigated area. They also have 7.5 acres of ponds that are part of the golf course. All of that is being served by potable water through a single 6-inch potable water meter. So their total site usage for the last 3 years is over 250 acre feet. We worked with the customer and staff. We did a detailed usage analysis on site, and so the total opportunity for retrofit to recycled water includes 115 acre feet for the golf course. The lakes, the just evaporation, is about 28 acre feet. We also did some drop down testing on the lakes and found that one of them was leaking pretty significantly. So by fixing that lake, that's going to save us about 23 acre feet. And then additional landscape, the front entryway, the dock park, some of those areas is another 6 acre feet. So a total of 172 acre feet of opportunity to retrofit or to recycle water. The project has a very innovative implementation approach. Many of the elements that are required as part of recycled water and regulatory compliance help to enhance the playability and water use efficiency for the project. We did develop a traditional retrofit plan using the existing as-builts. A couple challenges. The irrigation system is close to 50, 60 years old, and lack of as-builts, and so moving forward would require a lot of potholing to verify location of pipes and irrigation. So our scope of work includes a complete new golf course irrigation system with valve and head, low trajectory rotors and nozzles, very efficient. A significant amount of non-functional turf conversion, over 300,000 square feet. So there's the perimeter of the golf course is adjacent to all of the residences, and so from a regulatory perspective, we have to have a separation between the overspray of the rotors, so we avoid overspray onto the homes that we suck the water. So that provided an opportunity to remove a significant amount of turf and enhance the aesthetic appeal of the site. Well, we're going to also repair the lake and then reconfigure the lake in order to be able to use it as a wet well for the irrigation for the golf course pump station, and then the construction of a new pond pump station in the pond. We did reach out to several contractors that had experience working with our retrofits for phase one and phase two, and there was nobody. They had to do the traditional school park kind of project that was interested in taking on the full scope of the project. We did receive two contractors that were willing, though: Brightview Landscape Development and United Golf Landscape and Irrigation. Two proposals were received, and the customers are preferring to move forward with the UGLI up to about $2.8 million. So again, this project provides a lot of benefits to both for the water use efficiency, but also for developing partnerships and education to the community. Over 360,000 square feet of turf transformation, new premier irrigation efficiency. We're even including a new weather station that will help not only with the efficiency of the system, but also avoid overspray. If it's windy, it's not going to be irrigating. And we'll be able to maintain the sustainable recycled water supply used for all of the functional areas. The majority of the people that bought there bought because of the golf course, bought because of the lakes. And so this will maintain that lifestyle for them. And again, the community partnership and education, we're currently working with PGA as well as the owners of Pennant West and their project manager who's here with us today to develop a resident communication plan and presentation. So we'll be reaching out and doing presentations to all of the residents on a regular basis to educate them on irrigation efficiency, benefits of the project, the safety and benefits of recycled water use and the partnership that EMWD is taking with the customer. So this graph shows a before project and an after project. So right now, all potable water, 250 acre feet. When we're done, there's only going to be about 80 acre feet of potable water usage on the site. Here's what we're recommending in terms of financing. Again, the total project cost is $2.8 million. As we've done with a few other projects for phase two, we are requesting and recommending that we increase the maximum funding from $5,000 to $7,500 per acre foot. In addition, we will then extend the term from 8 years to 12 years to ensure cost recovery to the district. We're also expecting about $178,000 in MWD rebates through the WaterWise opportunities. So our total funding assistance from the district would be $1.468 million. The customer is going to be funding almost half of the cost, about $1.3 million. So it is our recommendation to approve and authorize the execution by the general manager of the Accelerated Retrofit Program financing agreement for the Lakes Project in the amount of $1,468,311, of which $112,695 will be reimbursed through SoCal Water Smart, $1.29 million is going to be financed through the ARP program. And then we also request an additional appropriation of $1.5 million to complete phase two of the Olympic Fire Rescue Program. So if there are any questions for myself, I'm happy to answer.
Yeah, I had a question. How's that going to be repaid, that $1.3 million? Is it through reduced or pay higher, like the other one?
Correct.
Higher?
Yes, so they will pay the special ARP rate, which is set at
75%
of the potable rate, and then the delta between that rate and the recycled water rate goes back and will recover the cost.
Did you estimate how many years that would be?
12 years.
12 years.
So that's 12. Okay.
Yes, right, and that's why it's longer than our standard term, so part of the action is to allow the 12-year payback.
So is that 23 acre feet of seepage currently going to our basin?
And Tyler's eating over.
Not in that end of town.
Actually, that's one of the regulatory requirements, is because that particular location is not in one of our basins that are managed, we are not technically allowed to have a pond there. So in order for us to put recycled water in it, it has to be a decorative fountain and lake. And so we have to fix that.
Okay. All right. Sorry, I think that's great. I need the item.
Thank you.
Okay. Do you have a question?
No, just a comment. There's so many great things about this, from turf removal to retrofit to financing. Outreach, good partner, all that stuff. I think it's one of a project that not many agencies can do except ours. So my compliments to staff and the customer for working on it.
Absolutely.
Well done.
Yeah. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Pauly absent from the dais.
I'll go
again. Okay. With that, we'll go to agenda item 5, which is the information items. Agenda item 5 is the Lakeview Subbasin Groundwater Banking and Conjunctive Use Initial Feasibility Study. Brian.
Yeah, John Davern couldn't make it here today to present, so I'll be presenting this. So, in this presentation, I'll cover the Lakeview Subbasin, our study objectives, project concepts. We took an early look at the costs, and then I'll present the findings of the study and what our next steps are. So essentially, what we did was the first leg of a feasibility study. So we're still really early in this project. So the Lakeview Subbasin is the basin right, pretty much right in the center of the basin. It has several advantages. One is it's not in the adjudicated area, so we don't have to deal with the water master if we want to do put and take there. That subbasin also has good water quality. We do have some brackish water over here that we're managing with our desalter wells to keep brackish water out of that subbasin. And again, if we are banking fresh water in the Lakeview subbasin, that's going to keep water levels up, and that will also help keep the brackish water out of that subbasin. So the study objectives were to evaluate the feasibility of doing put and take operations, so recharge and then extract the water using Metropolitan State Water Project water. The study was to identify any fatal flaws so that we could stop the project if it doesn't look like it's going to be feasible. And then to estimate preliminary recharge rates, to identify sites where we could potentially do recharge. And then identify any data gaps that we would need to resolve before we go on to the next phase of the feasibility study. So the project, this is the Lakeview subbasin here. You can see there's several pipelines that are nearby. There's the inland feeder, there's the Colorado River Aqueduct, and then there's the Lakeview pipeline. So of those, we would be interested in taking water off either the Lakeview or the inland feeder. We also identified two potential sites here. Being the creative people that we are, we named this the east site and this the west site. So that's how I'll refer to them going forward. This is a schematic of what the facilities might look like. So we do have an existing turnout off one of the MET pipelines. And this shows a couple of pipeline alignments that we could use to get to the recharge facilities. And then we identified up to six extraction wells, seven and four there, where we could use those to get the water back out of the ground. There are other pipelines proposed in the area, so we would need to advance some of those pipelines in the interim. It would be pipelines that would be built anyway, but we would advance those so that we could connect the wells to those pipelines. So the east and west site, the east site shown here is property owned by Riverside County Flood Control and Conservation District. They have a dam there, and this is currently either a retention or detention facility. I don't recall which at this time. So that's one of the sites that we're looking at potentially doing recharge at. The other site is some vacant land with three different property owners. And so this one would have the challenge of working with those different property owners and acquiring the property from them. There's advantages to either site, and so we explored those, and I have some additional information here. So in terms of the recharge capacity, basically we're looking at anywhere from 10 to 15,000 acre-feet per year, just based on the information we know today. We haven't done any exploratory drilling yet, but that is something that we would that we're planning to do next. That would give us a better idea of the recharge capacity of those facilities. We looked at the cost. So for the east site, we looked at 10,000 acre-feet recharge and extraction. So it would be 10,000 acre-feet per year. So we looked at all the facilities that would be required. And we even included this pump station, which may not be required if we were to connect to the inland feeder. So the inland feeder typically has relatively high HGL. So we included it here just so we could compare the cost. And if you notice, the cost of all in for the east site is about $65 million. The west site is about $82 million. And we're comparing that to our ERP program, where we would have the capacity to recharge $60,000 and then extract $30,000. So the cost of that program is estimated at $215 million. So just a quick look at these costs, and they're about a third of the cost of ERP, and they have about a third the capacity to extract the water. So in terms of capital costs, it seems in line. One of the things that we'll be looking at is the availability of grants specifically. We're seeing a lot of grant money being thrown toward projects that are identified in groundwater sustainability plans. So this is one of the projects we're including in our groundwater sustainability plan and trying to set it up so we can get grant money in the future.
And there, in the governor's sustainability bond proposal, there's a number of specific grant sources identified for these types of activities, also all Sigma-related activities. So we think there's really good opportunity to get grant funding should this prove to be feasible and we move forward with considering a project.
We also looked at the annual O&M costs, and for both sites, the costs are estimated to be on the order of $275 to $280, which is less than the MET treatment surcharge. So if we were to take MET raw water, recharge it, pump it back out of the ground, we could do that less than buying treated water from that. So summarizing the findings, we haven't found any fatal flaws yet. We have identified some data gaps that we'd like to fill in those gaps with the next phase of our feasibility study. And that our groundwater modeling indicates that we have the potential to be able to recharge and extract 10 to 15,000 acre feet per year. Our operations and maintenance costs are less than the treatment surcharge from that, and that additional field investigation is really needed to take this feasibility study to the next level. So in our next steps, we would be conducting what I call phase two of our feasibility study. We would do subsurface hydrogeologic investigations. We'd go out there and do some borings down and see what the materials are, and then estimate the recharge based on the materials that we're seeing. We would do some outreach to the local landowners, as well as Riverside County Flood and Nuevo Water Company. And then we would identify potential sources of external funding, including Riverside County Flood, which part of their mission is to do water conservation projects. And they've talked to us in the past about teaming on various projects, and we haven't found a good one recently that we could team on, but this might be that one. And then I mentioned the grant availability through SGMA. So that's the presentation. We wanted to let the board know where we were ahead of. We're working with our consultant on the next phase of the project, putting our proposals together for that, and getting proposals to do the geologic investigations. And we'll be back presenting that to the board probably next month. So, any questions?
Good presentation. It's a great location because of the proximity to Northern California water as well as Colorado River water. What are you anticipating? Is it going to be a blend, or are you going to have to use mostly state project?
Well, I think because of the water quality, we'd want to use the state water project water primarily, well, almost exclusively.
Yeah.
What are the basin plan objectives for TDS there? Do you recall, Brian?
I don't recall off the top of my head. But I think that we'd want to do what we could to keep the TDS low. So, you know, and we've got two pipelines there that typically carry a state water project.
Right.
So I don't think that would be an issue.
So preliminarily, did you find that there was adequate room in that basin or outside of the basin proper to?
Yeah, so we used our groundwater model to model the water going into the basin, and then where it would go, and you know where we could extract it from. So yeah.
No, I meant on the flood control property.
Oh, on
is
the flood
property.
Property?
Is there area available outside of the basin itself, the retention basin?
No, it would, the recharge would go on in the.
The recharge would actually occur within
correct.
That.
Yes.
Right.
So we wouldn't be able to do it when it's raining.
When the wet season is okay.
Right. So we would focus on when it's not plan to be used for detention.
However, if we could construct the basin in such a manner that we maintain it regularly, we scarify the bottom, we also could get the ultimate free water, stormwater, into the basin as well, and that could complement the imported water that we brought in. So we looked at this area because of, and I think, Director Record, you brought it up, it's the confluence of a lot of significant imported water infrastructure, as well as has stormwater capture opportunities, and on the one side in particular, it's owned by the Flood Control and Water Conservation District. And
so we might alleviate flood control through maintenance,
potentially.
All right. That's
because we would keep it very clean for that reason.
Okay, I understand.
It's an enhancement for recharge.
Yeah, exactly. So we think it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, and if we can get grant money for it, it's even that much better.
Does Nuevo pump from this basin?
They have some wells there, but they, my understanding, they've been pumping less and less. I think they've had some issues with their wells. So.
Okay. Al, do you know what the water quality issues they're having there?
PFAS issues. Sooner than later, though.
Yeah. But everybody that has moved out of that area over there, supplied
to the west. Yeah.
Yeah. And they moved into EMWD's district. They said there is no comparison. So they have some issues over there.
Okay. So we'll be back with some sure. items, but we thought we wanted to give the board an update on this and where we were going.
Thank you. Does the board want to take a break before we get into the very sparkling presentation
sure.
on finance data?
Sure.
Okay. Sure. Okay.